Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 38. The second part of today's podcast, we're going to have John Eisenberg, who was a guest in the first week of the season. He's going to break down the Ravens for us. John works at CSNBaltimore.com. A lot of good stuff from him, so stay tuned for that in the second part. Dave, obviously, a big week, a big game. The Steelers got trounced by the Ravens 35-7 in the opener at M&T Bank Stadium in week one. But things have been turning positively for the Steelers as they come into this 6-2. Not quite as good for the Ravens as they lost on Monday night to Jacksonville 2 weeks ago. They had trouble with Arizona at home, won on a last-second field goal, 30-27. This is a game, I think a lot of people think it's going to decide the division winner. I think it'll decide the division winner if the Steelers win. I'm not ready to concede the division if the Steelers lose, even though they'll be two games behind Baltimore at that point.
Yeah, I certainly do agree, and I think Vegas is also agreeing with you right now as well, because the latest Super Bowl odds that came out, you know, prior to this week or just after this past week's games has, really likes the Steelers' chances now in the Super Bowl as well, because I think right now that they currently sit at, 9-1 odds to win it all, whereas after last Super Bowl, they were 10-1 odds to win it all, and then it moved into August, 14-1 odds, and now it's back to 9-1, so I think everybody is, I don't think we're as slow and as old as everybody thinks that we probably were. And this game too, David, I think, you know, everybody thinks, well, here we go with basically the same type game that we played week one against the Ravens. I think this is going to be a totally different game as scheming on both sides of the ball this time around. But I'm with you. I think you want the Steelers to win it, most definitely. I think it really gives them an upper hand on the AFC North if they do win. But if, like you said, if they don't lose, the way the Ravens have played, dropped a couple of eggs this year, I'm not ready to concede it either.
We talk about that first game, and one of the things I've harped on is the fact the Steelers are 6-2 with a minus 10 turnover differential. I guess, you know, if I'm going to be honest about it and fair about it, 7 turnovers in that game. If you take that away, obviously the turnover differential looks much better. Ben has been much better with the ball since then. I don't think the Steelers have lost a fumble since maybe one, but I can't remember one, and I think I read that they haven't lost a fumble since that opening game. So the Steelers have done a much better job of taking care of the ball. Give the Ravens all the credit in that first game. The Steelers might have come out flat. The Steelers might have come out this and that, but basically the Ravens kicked their ass. They were the more physical team. They dominated them on both lines from the first play of the game when Ray Rice went on that stretch play left for about 27 yards or whatever it was. You're certainly going to be a different game plan and certainly a different team. And you talked about the Steelers getting, people talking about them being old. Well, I'll tell you one thing they're not going to be on defense this week is old, is because they get a bunch of injuries, and it looks like some young guys are going to be in there. And Mike Tomlin talked about it yesterday. So why don't you take us through the injury report and where things stand as we go into Wednesday's practice?
Yeah, we have, there's a lot of news floating around about the linebackers, and you're going to have to try to sift through it the best you can. With social media, people are talking more freely and all like that as well. Doug Legursky with that dislocated toe was the only guy that Mike Tomlin actually ruled out yesterday. Now, linebacker James Ferrier, with that calf injury, supposedly that's going to be a 3-4 week maybe injury from what they're saying. Although Tomlin seems to think that we'll see what level of participation he's at through the week. But I'd be surprised if he played to start with. Chris Hoke is still trying to battle back from that stinger. I don't have a good feeling on that. I think practice will decide that this week, more specifically today, to see where he's at. Lamar Woodley, of course, he went down with that hamstring last week, and it was kind of reminiscent to the one that Andre Johnson had against the Steelers back in week four there, where he just dropped. And normally those type things are not one-week injuries. Normally, that's going to sideline the player for at least a week, maybe longer. Now, Woodley's claiming that don't count him out just yet. He's saying all the right things and all, but I really don't see them risking him as far as that goes.
Yeah, Dave, let me chime in my two cents on that. And I think you're exactly right, and I think it's a point worth noting. I mean, there are very few injuries other than stingers or whatever. If a player doesn't come back in the game, from an injury that he receives during a game, if it's going to keep him out the rest of the game and he can't make it back, particularly with muscle pulls and things like that, ankle sprains, it's highly unlikely that in 6 days that you're going to get healthy enough to be able to make it back. I mean, it's certainly possible if it's a mild ankle sprain and they tape it up and stuff like that, but muscle pulls, you can almost guarantee, and we saw it with Mawelde Moore. He missed a couple games. You mentioned Andre Johnson, the exact same thing. When you go down like you got shot and you can't get up and you know you have that kind of pain, I mean, a lot of us have done it. I'll be absolutely shocked if Woodley plays this week, and I'll tell you what, I think there's a decent chance he doesn't play next week, and then he gets to recover through the bye. So it wouldn't surprise me if we don't see any of these linebackers back until after the bye. And if you had made me take bets on which one might be back, I'd take James Harrison.
Yeah, and he's got that eye. He has been cleared to practice, and his agent tried to tell Ed Bouchette that he would be a go this week, but Harrison turned around and shot it down on Facebook and Twitter. I think I heard that they're worried more about some infection up in there right now. And they just want to get past this one final hurdle. So, although he's been cleared to practice, I expect him to be very limited on the injury report this week, probably just out there running around. I expect him, when he does come back, to have one of those dark visors on because of light sensitivity problems that supposedly he's having. So I'm with you that Harrison, Woodley, and Ferrier, I expect all those guys to be down this week. Now, Hines Ward, that ankle that he suffered against the Cardinals and all, reportedly that was not a high ankle sprain. So Hines normally takes Wednesday off. So, he might end up being limited today or, just get out there and test it out and all. So I think the jury's still kind of out on him. I kind of expect him to play. Jason Worlds is the other guy listed, with that quad. Boy, if there was ever a week that you would like to see this guy suited up in a uniform, this would be it, even though he hasn't taken, hardly any defensive snaps this year for the Steelers outside of some time, I think, in that Texans game when James Harrison went down. He's another one to note. And also, Tomlin popped on us, the Emmanuel Sanders has a left knee that needs to be evaluated. So we'll see how that goes. And on top of it, bless his heart, Sanders lost his mother the other night. Evidently, she died in her sleep. So, thoughts and prayers go out to Emmanuel Sanders. What a fantastic kid this young fella is as well. And I could not imagine, what's going on in his life right now. And I assume he's back in Texas probably today helping the family get through this ordeal and all. And I would expect him not to show up as practicing this week. And it could very well affect his status come Sunday, too, depending on how this knee is. Let's hope it's not serious. And that makes it even more vital that hopefully Hines Ward comes back this week. And, Jericho Cotchery will get even more snaps probably during practice this week, and that's not going to be a bad thing for him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at a silver lining, we talked about this early in the year. The Steelers have very typically had their bye week in the week four or week five, and it's going to come up here in week 11 for the Steelers. It's the latest that I ever remember it. And boy, they can use it. I mean, they could have used it anywhere along the way. But the silver lining in all of this is if they get through these next two games, they're able to win these next two games, and they can go into their bye week 8-2 before they play Kansas City on the road, have guys coming back, getting healthy. There's a point where not only will some guys get some rest into that, if they're able to go win a couple of these games right coming out of the bye when they get the Browns twice, they get Kansas City, they get St. Louis at home, then They're in a position not only to get a home field advantage, but maybe to rest some guys as well. And as we've talked about, long physical season for these guys. The idea of adding two more games when you see a team get banged up as much as the Steelers are banged up, you can certainly understand why many of the players are against that idea. But, the silver lining is it'd be nice to be having to buy right now, but we'll get it in 2 weeks. And if the team comes through these two games and can manage to, somehow pull them both off, they're going to be in pretty darn good shape.
I could not agree more. This is going to be really, with the things that we saw with the man press coverage running out of the dime last week against Tom Brady and the Patriots and the way they basically shut that down. When you get a healthy, and I expect that to continue, I wrote a nice article last night about Dick LeBeau and how he's not insane. He just didn't have the right personnel or the time to get implemented what he wanted to implement probably this season due to the lockout and all. And all the signs were there all along that this thing was coming, and we just really didn't pick up on it thoroughly. We saw hints of it with the dime after Harrison went down, and it was easy to point a finger to that as being the reason. But if you read that article, you can see that this is probably taking shape a lot longer or a lot further ahead than this. And you mentioned on the young players that contributed. Let's kind of touch on that. We saw Stevenson Sylvester make his first start inside linebacker in the base formation last week against the Patriots. Now, he did not receive that much playing time. They were in base a lot the first two series on defense, and they hardly played it again the rest of the game. I think two or three more snaps. Sylvester looked kind of in a fog there. I wasn't overly impressed, although it's kind of hard to judge a guy on his first basically career start on only 10 or 11 plays. That was a little bit of a concern. Also, when Woodley went down, we saw Chris Carter get into the game, and Tomlin hit on this yesterday. When Carter came in, he actually lined up at the right outside linebacker spot and then took a couple of snaps there, and then they decided to switch him back over to the left and bring Timmons back over to his side, and Tomlin had a great explanation for that. Basically, he said, hey, Carter was already over his head and uncomfortable. We figured, hey, we might as well make Lawrence Timmons comfortable.
Right. In this. Why make them both uncomfortable?
Right, exactly. And I agree with that. Now, Carter, the kid's got a hell of a motor. I mean, the guy is quick off the snap. I mean, you can see it on a couple of plays in that game. Unfortunately, one of them, it was a defensive offsides, but he's got a quick first step. The problem that this kid lacks is strength, and this was the knock that Keith Butler set on him following the draft and all. The kid needs to get stronger, and he needs to develop more counter moves. And if you want to go back and watch that interview of Butler, he hit it to the T on this kid. The kid needs to get stronger. He needs another pass rush move instead of just trying to beat everybody to the edge. There were times in this Patriots game where he was against the tackles and it was just a mismatch. He does provide, I think he had a quarterback hit actually in that game, but it was because of a twist where he looped around inside and was able to get after Brady there. But to expect this kid to start at left outside linebacker in place of Lamar Woodley this week, I just don't see this happening. So let me throw it to you. Tomlin hit on a couple of options yesterday, one being Brett Kiesel kind of standing up more than what he normally does and kind of assuming an outside linebacker role. That would allow Timmons to switch over to the left outside spot there. Another option, of course, would be, if Jason Worlds plays, lining him up at left outside linebacker. He's probably best built, best tools to get the pass rush. Of course, not effective as Woodley would be. I think it would be foolish to expect that. But how would you attack this based on what Tomlin said yesterday, if indeed we are without the three linebackers?
Well, I, it's a great question, and we talked about the scheme against the Patriots, what we saw LeBeau do, what we saw the players do in terms of being able to cover. So one of the things is, Tom Brady's looking for those quick hitters, the early windows on his guys. When he was standing back in the pocket, it's because he didn't have looks. The Ravens are going to attack it a little differently. They'll look for some of that stuff with the tight ends and Ray Rice, but they also have tried to get the vertical passing game going. And if they're thinking the Steelers can't get pressure, You know, they may attack that defense a little bit differently and may look to get Torrey Smith deep or Anquan Boldin, you know, loose a little further down the field rather than just taking underneath stuff. So I guess what I've found most interesting, and I've talked about it since kind of week three, is that, you know, Brett Kiesel has been probably the best player on defense. Certainly Woodley the last 4 weeks has been fantastic, but I think Brett Kiesel has play in and play out and game in and game out been the Steelers' best player. And we saw him against the Patriots hand up, moving around a lot. Pretty much he was not lined up at that right defensive end position every play, and he was not hands down every play. So I think Kiesel's a guy that they will use in a lot of different ways in this defense. I think you're right about wanting to keep Timmons on the outside on the right. I think the Steelers are going to be concerned with how they're going to get pressure. And I think you might even see situations, you know, where you have Haywood and you have Ziggy and you have, you know, Casey in there. You have Steve McClendon in there. I don't expect to see a lot of 4-3, but I think there's a chance you see a little bit of 4-3. But I do think the personnel groupings will be things we haven't seen before at all. And I totally agree with what you said about Chris Carter. Tomlin said, look, I think Tomlin was maybe realized he was a bit overly enthusiastic about how the young kids played, or overly enthusiastic for him about how the young kids played when he spoke about it immediately after the game Sunday. And when asked about it in the press conference yesterday, he said, look, the young kids played hard and they contributed to put their hand on the pile like we expect them to. The standard's a standard, but they didn't get it all right. By no means did they get it all right. There is tons of room for improvement. So I don't think they want Chris Carter out there for 40 plays at left linebacker. I do think Jason Worlds, if he can go 100% today and tomorrow, will probably be the first option there. And I got to think they'd like to leave Timmons outside on the right. So I think they'll be fine going with Foote and Sylvester in the inside. I really just think the big question mark is who's going to go on the outside of the left, and then how are they going to deploy Kiesel if they want to mix things up. And you've talked about the Ravens' ability to run and the Steelers' concern about Ray Rice. And so this might be a game where we've seen the Steelers do some things differently in the last game when they played. If they feel like they might get gouged by the run, you could see, I think there's even a chance you could see McClendon and Casey Hampton on the field with Ziggy and Kiesel in some combination effectively playing with four guys down.
You know, the best thing about this, we kind of hit briefly on this in the last podcast wrapping up the Patriots game there, is right now with all the things that LeBeau has done with this dime and this man press coverage and all, and now with the injuries mixed in, it's a small little blessing from the standpoint that there is absolutely no way the Ravens can game plan for all of what they think we might do. I think a little bit of the nuggets that Tomlin threw out there, hey, Tomlin's excellent at working the media. Say what you want to say about his press conferences at some time and how he praised the opposition week in and week out, makes them all look like Pro Bowlers. He is excellent at sending some missiles not only to his players, but to the opposition as well. Well, you hearken back last week to, well, it's not a foregone conclusion that Ike Taylor's going to follow Wes Welker around. He made some, you know, threw that out there. And then yesterday kind of throwing out the idea of the 4-2 and the 4-3, you know, the Ravens don't know what's coming right now. So that's always a good sign. When you have a better idea what your opposition is going to do than they do, especially on offense. So, you know, another key factor, and we're going to get in with John Eisenberg in this here shortly, is Lee Evans could very well miss this game. It sounds like he will. We'll know more when this practice report comes out today. But last time these two teams played, Ike Taylor pretty much was manned up on Lee Evans, shut him down. It was the start of the great season that Ike has had. And this game, you could very well see him try to take away Anquan Boldin, and they do not have a lot of depth outside, you know, after at the receiver position outside of Boldin. So what a key injury I think Lee Evans would be missing this game, allowing Ike Taylor to possibly man coverage and be physical with Anquan Boldin for 60 minutes.
Yeah, and that's going to be a big thing. Again, Not that the Ravens tight ends are as good as New England's tight ends, but they're good and they're young. There's a reason they got rid of Todd Heap. There was a lot of consternation in Baltimore about that. After, you know, in the preseason, you know, he was let go right out of the chute. But, you know, they obviously saw something in these two young tight ends, Pitta and Dickinson. And they're good. They were good against us in week one, running drag routes. And we'll see how the Steelers try to approach that again, whether they try to lock William Gay up on one of those guys or if they play with Mundy again in the box. You know, that's another thing we talk about, whether the Steelers will play some more nickel and dime and maybe use Mundy or maybe use Cortez Allen. But as you said, if they don't have Lee Evans, they have Torrey Smith, who's a burner, but he's obviously not a veteran receiver. He's finding his way. So if you can take Bolden away, then it's, you know, Rice out of the backfield and the two tight ends, depending on what kind of packages they line up with. The good thing for the Ravens, if you're the Ravens coming into the game, you may not know what the Steelers are going to scheme with defensively, but you put a beat down on them in week one, and you've had troubles offensively, but you scored some points in the second half, and you have to think, just what you pointed out, they're going to have Ray Rice and Anquan Bolden be their go-to guys. And I'm sure no matter what the Steelers scheme-wise, those are the first two guys that they're going to be thinking about, just like LeBeau and Tomlin were thinking about Wes Welker and then the Patriots tight ends. Going to be much the same approach this week. I'm as curious, you know, we were talking last week about how dying to see the schemes that the Steelers come up with. Really, I think hoping that Dick LeBeau would do something a little different than play an umbrella kind of cover two soft coverage. And they did, it exceptionally well. Gives them the options this week. Now I'm more than anything, I'm dying to see the personnel groupings they come out. Some of that's going to be contingent as we see coming out of the next three practices, who's healthy. But it'll be fun to see how they try to mix and match personnel.
Yeah, and I watching the last few Ravens games and all, now we know what Jacksonville is capable of on defense. They did it to us, and they did the same thing to Flacco and the Ravens a couple weeks ago. The Flacco just couldn't hit anything broadside of the barn, couldn't hit water in a boat, you know. And that's not surprising because, you know, he has shown at times throughout his career that he struggles, especially on third downs. And if you look at his third downs completion ratio this year, 43.1% on third downs this year, David. And I pulled some stats of some other quarterbacks with a minimum of, like, I think it was 40 or 50 attempts on third down. He is the worst quarterback percentage ratio on third down. And when you move to the area of say, like, third down and I think it's like six or more, let's see, where is it here? Third down and six or more, 40% completion ratio. So if they can on the early downs get in some sort of base, whether, like you said, you go four across, with even McClendon and Hampton in the game, and Kiesel and Ziggy Hood down there, if you can stop Ray Rice on first down, get them into some obvious passing situations, I think that's going to be key in this game, because Flacco, especially against this man coverage that we expect to see more of, especially minus Lee Evans, and especially with a different coverage on these tight ends this time around, I think that's going to be the key to this game. We'll break it down a lot more in depth as we go forward, especially on Friday here. But I wouldn't, if I'm the Ravens, I line up and I try to do the same thing I did the week one, and that's run that 22 personnel with Vontae Lee as the fullback, and I try to ram this thing and make and tear up the linebackers and make the defensive line make the tackles.
Yeah, it's that, and some play action they ran on first down to the tight ends and to the fullback. Surprisingly enough, we never expected Vontae Leach to even touch the ball. I think he was targeted four or five times. So yeah, I'm with you. I think play action and Ray Rice on first down, and the Steelers are going to kind of know what they're expected to see, and it'd be good old fashioned Steeler Raven football. The more physical team, the team that dominates each line, is probably going to win this game. Dave, just to wrap up a couple things that happened during the week. One is kind of as we talked about a little bit on Monday. It's surprising to me that the officials got this wrong. It wasn't the easiest thing to see, but Troy's punch in the game on Sunday, obviously illegal. You're not allowed to just knock the ball forward intentionally like that. It was not going to be an impact play on the game. If you had the Steelers under 24, you're probably not so happy when you read that on Monday. But the refs kind of clearly missed that one. And I figured that was kind of more refs being not 100% familiar with the rule there, because I thought it was pretty obvious, but some other people said maybe it wasn't so obvious.
Yeah, you hit it on the head there. I was unsure of the play myself, actually, what the ruling is on it. And neither player can bat the ball towards the opposing player's end zone, period. You just can't bat the ball around like that. I think if the proper foul or if the proper penalty would have been called it would have been at the spot of the foul type penalty there. It would have been a 10-yard penalty from that point. And how much time would the Patriots would have had on the clock there, what, about 19 or 22 seconds or something?
Well, I don't think they put the time back on the clock, so the rest of the play would have run how far down it ran, which was down to, I think, six seconds, whatever it was. So I don't even think that much.
And they would have been out of timeouts anyway. So, you know, I would take my chances even with the great Tom Brady, being, let's see, probably around, 35, 40-yard line. You basically have two plays if there is 18, 19 seconds on the clock. I don't think they get that done. But you're right. It was, and it's a heads. I don't care if it's a penalty or not. I think it's a heads-up play by Troy. To knock that ball. And I liked his response. You know, he says, well, I'm going to tell you whatever's not going to get me in trouble, basically is what he said on that. And they did miss it. I don't think it's a reviewable play, though, because it was not a penalty. And the safety part of it was a reviewable play, I think, to determine whether or not Ziggy Hood had possession of that ball in the end zone there. But, I'm with you. The officiating probably not where it should have been in that game, especially if you look at a Gronkowski touchdown we talked about the other on Monday as well. But a couple other things that have happened this week as well. Ben Roethlisberger named AFC Offensive Player for the Week. I think that's the second time. The last time was against the Titans. It's not much. It's just an award. But, boy, what great football he's playing right now outside of just a few minor mistakes. The interception, of course, against the Patriots last week. And, boy, you cannot say enough the way these young kids are playing right now, Sanders and Antonio Brown, and it just you really have a good feeling right now, as you said, with the bye week coming up. If the Steelers can get past these next 2 weeks and not sustain any new injuries and start getting these healthy bodies back, you have to be excited of the chances to make another run at a seventh Lombardi right now.
Yep, and Dave, before we wrap up the first half and get to our interview with John Eisenberg, I'm going to rant about this a little bit more on Friday, but I have to tell you, we've a lot of good things to say about the Steelers and tons of good things to say about the Rooneys and how the organization is run. Let me tell you one thing that is just abominably bad. The security lines getting into Heinz Field are a effing joke. I got to the game, which was a 4:15 kickoff. I think I was at the gate at Heinz Field at 3:50. I didn't get into the stadium till about 4:12. Just barely getting toward my seat at the kickoff. I've been going to games there since this place opened. They have volunteers are the people, college volunteers are the people who do this work, who do the security lines, who pat you down. Women go through lines with women. Men go through lines with men. I got to the gate, and there were six women and two men kind of at the area I was going through. People were beyond pissed off. You're sitting there. You're crowded in a very tight area, kind of like cattle, and everybody's making a joke. But I'm telling you, if people in the organization hear this, and I'm gonna lead Friday's show off with this, but I was so pissed off about it at the time, and it's worth talking about. Steeler fans spend a lot of damn money on this team, and we do a lot to support this team, and they need to get some professional people in there. They need to make sure they have the right number of people in there. They need to make sure people aren't waiting 30 minutes to get in the damn stadium. It's really a bad thing, and it's been consistently bad since Heinz Field opened, and Sunday really put me over the top.
Yeah, it sounds like it did. Up on the soapbox, man, today. We'll hit on this more. Yeah, you can go into a full rant on this on Friday as well. I'm sure we'll have some time for that. But having not been to Heinz Field myself, living down in Florida, I can't really comment on that. But you're not the first person I think I've heard comment on that as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, good stuff today, and we've got a great interview coming up with John Eisenberg that we've already cut, so we know what's coming. John is a guest with us earlier in the season and gave us a great preview on the season opener about the Ravens, and he hit everything right on, and another really nice job, and appreciate his time. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, part two coming up. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We're pleased to have as our guest for the second time this year, John Eisenberg of CSNBaltimore.com. John also has his own website at johneisenberg.com. He's authored a bunch of books, including a great one on Vince Lombardi. And you can follow John this week and all season, obviously, on Twitter at CSNEisenberg. John, thanks for taking the time to be with us on the Terrible Podcast.
Good to be with you.
Hey, John, give us an update on the injury report and how the Ravens are health-wise coming into the game.
The injury, the Ravens primarily, they've had some good and bad injury news lately. It's always the case, right? They've gotten Jimmy Smith back in the last couple weeks. He's their number one draft pick, their cornerback. He probably would have been starting by now if he'd been healthy. He had a high ankle sprain and the first game, the Pittsburgh game, and barely played for 6 weeks, or was out for 6 weeks. He's back now, working his way into the rotation. And Chris Carr, who was their nickelback, was back, had a hamstring all season, was finally healthy, played the nickel role last week against the Cardinals. And he's a real steadying presence in the secondary. So they're back. The injury problems that have persisted all year and continue to are Lee Evans, the receiver, and Ben Grubbs, the guard. They haven't played since the very beginning of the season. Grubbs has a serious turf toe, very tough injury for a lineman, and he's disappeared from view. He hasn't played since the second week of the season. There's no update. It just doesn't look good. I mean, he never practices. And Evans has, they've never really disclosed what it is, a foot injury. I think it's a stress fracture. And, again, not a lot of improvement. And they badly need him in there, but there's no sign that he's going to be there. They haven't IR'd him yet, so they still have some hope, but there's no telling when they'll be back.
Yep, and then they put the linebacker, the special team stud, on the IR yesterday with an abdominal pull, Burgess?
Yeah, they were being nice to the guy. They'd already cut him twice, and they were yo-yoing him back and forth, and they IR'd him, I guess, so he can get paid, you know. I mean, yep. They were, cut him for the 26th time this year or whatever. So, yeah, he's a good special teams guy, and they're having a big problem there. So that's not an insignificant thing.
John, obviously in the opening game of the season, we went into that game, Steeler fans, very pumped up and had high expectations. The Steelers got their ass handed to them in that game, 35-7. Then, we distance ourselves from what goes on a week-to-week basis, and we see the team lose to the Titans the next week. They seem to get rolling, and then on national TV, they really just look awful against Jacksonville, and obviously had a very bad first half last week against Arizona. What's going on with this team?
Well, what's going on, the defense has played well all season. The defense is playing at a higher level than it did last year. That's the one constant. They're first in the league in overall defense, third against the pass, third against the rush. Very solid. Chuck Pagano's defensive coordinator is having his scheme is much more aggressive. They already have 25 sacks this year. They had 27 all last year. So much, much better on defense this year. They gave up some points against Arizona. A lot of them, it was either a return or a short field. Was the majority of the points, so that happens, and they're not impossible to score against, but they're good on defense. The problem has been the offense, really inconsistent. Anyone who watched that Jacksonville game, I mean that I think was the worst offensive performance I've ever seen from an NFL team. No first downs for 39 minutes, no points for 58. And Jacksonville, they got a nice little defense, but come on. I mean, and they just completely bogged down. They can't figure out what they are. They've been a running team over the years. They've stopped doing that this year. They've just hell-bent on the vertical passing game and becoming more explosive, which is fine. But, you know, none of it, I mean, they're just sort of caught in between what they want to be, what they are. The blocking on the left side of the line with Bryant McKinney and Andre Garrod has been very shaky, veteran guys. So that's just a lot of things in play that are not working. So not a lot of time for Flacco. He's had a few more accuracy issues than he's had in the past. He's normally pretty accurate. One thing you can say about him, he's fairly accurate. It's always been something he's had going for him, high school and college. It's been sort of a problem this year. So they just have a lot that's gone wrong. And for the fans, we're encouraged to see them pull out of it sort of against the Cardinals in the second half on Sunday. They went to the no huddle, the hurry-up offense, and they were much better. Just a lot of short routes. They got their tight ends in play. Ed Dixon and Dennis Pitta and Anquan Boldin had a huge game, basically just willed them to win that game from behind. So they come into Pittsburgh asking a lot of questions. Who are we on offense? Can we establish any level of consistency? So that's where they are.
Yeah, John, I think the Steelers just went through asking the same question just recently, too, and I think we kind of found out a little bit about ourselves in this last game against New England. The Steelers have made a switch now. We've seen over since last, you know, the first time we played Baltimore, we mostly played nickel zone coverages. Against New England now, we seem to be playing basically all press man in a dime six defensive back package. Now, with you said that Lee Evans possibly, well, it looks like he might be out according to you. Ike Taylor this time might be lined up one-on-one on Anquan Boldin. And then, of course, they're spread it out the rest of the defensive backs against the tight ends. Is that how you're seeing it? And is taking Anquan Boldin away in the passing game the most crucial part of this game, or is it stopping the run?
I would say take Boldin away. Really throws them off. Taking Boldin away. I mean, the running game, they have not established the run in any game this year until late in a game. Their numbers are decent. They're in the top 10 or close to the top 10, and they, you know, Ray Rice, a great running back, and Ricky Williams, an excellent backup. He's already busted a couple of long ones. But they really are just passing the ball so much more that you really need to focus on that end of the defense. And if you take Lee Evans' absence, means if you take Boldin away, you're down to a rookie. Torrey Smith is your only other wideout that's got a catch this year. And, there's another rookie, Laquan Williams, an undrafted free agent, who's number three receiver, has got a couple catches. But, so if you can stop a rookie, if you take Boldin away, you're down to stopping a rookie. Pretty good shot at that if you're the Steelers. So Smith is very fast. He's made some game-breaking plays. He had one last Sunday. And I think he's going to be a pretty good receiver. But, you know, he is a rookie, and I think that the Steelers would take their chances with whether or not he can beat them. So, yeah, taking Boldin away would be absolutely the key.
You know, when we go back and we watch that first game over again against the Ravens there, they just ran almost, you know, at will with that zone blocking scheme. But you know what? You go back and look at some of these games the last few weeks that the Ravens have had. Have they gotten away from moving, you know, kind of that stretching that stretch play to the outside, and it doesn't look like they're doing as much cut blocking that they had so much success against the Steelers back in week one. You would think coming into this game, why would they change their game plan that worked so well against the Steelers in week one?
Well, that's a very good question. They have gone away from it a little bit. They still do it. It's more of a blend. But as I said, there's just a lot less of the running game going on. A lot more of the passing game now, but they fell behind. They were three touchdowns behind Arizona on Sunday, so you're never going to run the ball as much then. But the fact is the blocking, regardless of what scheme you're running, the blocking has been a little shaky. I mean, McKinney and Garrod on the left side have just been, and Michael Orr on the right side at right tackle, he's fine, but I'm not sure he's a Pro Bowl player. Marshall Yanda, the right guard, has been their best lineman with Grubbs out. Matt Burke is okay at center. He's always dealing with injuries, and you know, he's a veteran. He's certainly smart and knows what he's doing. He's not an oversized physical guy. So, and then the left side of the line is just really shaky. So there's just not enough good blocking going on. So they, you know, the ground and pound Ravens, those days are over.
Whatever happened with the signing of Garrard? Is he getting playing time?
Oh, he's starting. He started
He's playing the left guard spot for
Grubbs. He has started since week three. He is the left guard on this team with no timetable for Grubbs' return. Again, and this is vague, you know, all these injuries. I mean, Grubbs could play on Sunday. There's just no telling. But there's no indication. I mean, he didn't even practice last week, so we'll see how it goes. But in the interim, I mean, yeah, Garrard is the left guard on this team and, you know, a center for the Cowboys, a Pro Bowl center for the last 5 years, not quite as effective at guard.
Flipping over to the other side of the ball, obviously there was a little bit of news after the Jacksonville game when Terrell Suggs had some comments about feeding Ray Rice the ball and getting the ball in the hands of the playmakers. It seems like that was just standard commentary, but the media obviously ran with it pretty aggressively. Are there any issues in the locker room?
I would say no. I mean, Suggs is Suggs. He is, you know, I know the Steelers fans probably can't stand the guy. He is a lot of fun, and he's a good impact. He has a good impact on the team. He's a leader, and, you know, his he brings sort of a lighthearted aspect to things, and so when he came down pretty hard, there's no question he was speaking for whatever group in the locker room was frustrated with the play calling that night in Jacksonville. So I think it had an impact, and I think it had a little bit of a lasting effect. You know, I mean, everybody downplays it, but I think when one of your best players calls out your offensive coordinator, yeah, I think I don't think they have a problem in the locker room. I mean, it's too much of a veteran team, but I do think that his doing that did have an impact, and they made sure that, I mean, it was embarrassing. Ray Rice touched the ball 13 times in that game against Jacksonville. Should never happen. So it was kind of like a call to arms or a call to common sense or whatever. So it was not an insignificant moment, and I think it, you know, it had an impact for sure.
The obviously, you talked about the Ravens defense. Mike Tomlin, in his weekly press conference, makes it sound like the Steelers are playing an all-pro team every week. But he went through and highlighted some guys. And everybody knows about Nada, and I guess Cody's been pretty good. A couple of guys that he highlighted that, you know, certainly were question marks coming into the year. He highlighted Ladarius Webb at the corner spot, and he talked about Bernard Pollard, who's been playing, you know, I guess every down now that Zbikowski's been hurt. Have those guys been, the secondary been more effective than you thought maybe at the beginning of the year, particularly since Smith hasn't really contributed?
Yeah, the surprise on defense has definitely been the corners.
Because it's exactly the same for the Steelers. Corner play has been much better than expected. You know, Ike Taylor's been good, and he was expected to be good, but the other guys have been much better than expected.
Yeah, I mean, if you had told me before the year that the corners would be Kerry Williams, who was buried on the depth chart, and Ladarius Webb, and then nobody would blink, I would say, you got to be kidding me. But Webb, of course, highly athletic player and just a tough little guy. And Kerry Williams has been the biggest surprise. You know, he's been very solid out there. And he's a big, spidery guy, plays a lot of press coverage, and gets beat now and then, but he doesn't give up a whole lot. It's helped him a lot that the pass rush is so much more effective. I mean, you know, as you well know, it's a combination of things in pass coverage, and the pass rush can make all the difference. It certainly did in that first game against Pittsburgh. So, you know, that's where there's really a change in the Ravens this year, and it's helped those guys on the corner. I mean, we'll see. Smith's going to play more and more, and they think he's a complete stud. You know, they just love him, and they drafted him to put him in there. So we'll see, but those other two guys have played so well that you know, there's no job available right now.
Are we going to see Joe? They seemed to really click when they went into that no huddle against the Cardinals. Almost, I guess it was almost by necessity necessity as far down as they were in that game. But are we going to see more of that now this week? Are they going to go into that earlier this this week against the Steelers?
Well, that sound you hear is the fans calling for it. That is for sure. They want it big time because that offense had ground to a complete halt until they did that. So, yes, it seemed to unlock some things for Flacco. He seemed more comfortable. He found his tight ends a lot. I mean, a lot of things happened, but they started moving the chains, which they were just on third downs, just putrid. That's the only word for it. They're always in third and seven, and they couldn't get it done. So they started picking up. They would throw on first down, say to Dennis Pitta. But both these young tight ends are pretty good. The fans here were not happy when Todd Heap was cut. Heap, a great player for many years here. But these guys are an effective pair. They're young. They bring two different things to the table, Ed Dixon being the other one. And Flacco and Dennis Pitta seem to have a real nice chemistry going. So, I think there will be more of the gun. John Harbaugh said on Monday in his press conference that there's plenty of plays where we have to have him under center. So it's not going to be exclusive by any means. And, of course, they want to leave it unclear as to how much they're going to be doing. They want the Steelers to be guessing. But they'll be, I would think, more of that spread than you've seen before.
And based of how, the Steelers linebacker core, how banged it up is right now, the sound that you're hearing out of Pittsburgh right now is we hope Joe Flacco is in the gun and having to throw because Ray Rice, we just don't want Ray Rice running it down our throat again with the way the cornerbacks, as David mentioned, have come around this year. We'd much rather Joe Flacco take our chances with Flacco throwing 50 times a game.
Yeah, I understand that. But what's interesting with Rice, they're using Rice more and more than just handing it to him. They're really using him out of the backfield a lot. They love to isolate him on the line. When they find him on the linebacker or linebacker on him, maybe one-on-one, just a quick window there, put him out in the slot, they get it to him or they try to get it to him. And so that's how they're using him more than ever this year than just handing it to him. So the absence of the top flight linebackers, that's how I think the Ravens would try to exploit that.
I feel like we've seen that for a couple of years. I just think back to that play in overtime where Ray Rice was isolated on James Ferrier in 2009, and it was, all systems go for the Ravens on that play. And I can see why they'd want to do that. Hey, John, you want to give us a prediction on the game as to how you think it's going to play out?
I would pick the Steelers in this game. I think the Steelers have the emotional edge. They want revenge for what happened in that opener. That was pretty embarrassing and certainly not typical Steeler football. And I would say something along the lines of 21-17. The Ravens. I mean that's sort of the way it is between these two teams. A sweep, I mean, it occasionally happens when one of them is clearly better than the other, Steelers having done it more than the Ravens. But I don't know that that's the case this year. The Ravens, they played as well as they can play in that opener. That's one of their best games they've ever played, and they've had trouble getting back to that. They like to think they can go in there and win, but I think they're going to have a tough time.
John, Dave, anything you want to wrap up with?
No, that's absolutely great.
Well, listen, John, fantastic to have you. And to all our listeners, you can find John's blog on csnbaltimore.com. He's got a nice piece up there titled Can the Ravens Paint Another Masterpiece, where he goes through basically kind of five or six keys that happened in the game in week one and the odds of each of those things repeating themselves. You can also find John on Twitter this week and for the rest of the season, at CSN Eisenberg, EISENBERG. John, great stuff as always, and we'll look forward to talking to you again later this season. Maybe we'll get a third matchup in the playoffs.
That'd be fun. I hope so.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks very much. Thanks again to John Eisenberg. Some great stuff from him. As always, thank you for listening. We will be back at you Friday with our Ravens preview and our picks for the week. Episode 38, Season 2 of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Thanks for listening.